This is a No Surf Music, Burning River Fireside Chat. With guests, the David Wax Museum. I'm your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond. For the best in Americana, alt country, indie rock, and more, point your browser to nosurfmusic.com. All right, so welcome to another edition of No Surf Music, Burning River Fireside Chats. And joining me today are the co-front persons of the great band, the David Wax Museum, Mr. David Wax himself and Sue Slezak. Got it right. And they are playing a show tonight at the Oracle in Canton, which should be a hell of a lot of fun. And let me tell you, if you've never seen these guys play live, you are missing out horrendously, because they are awesome. So thanks a lot, guys, for coming out and talking to us.
A pleasure.
Thanks for coming down to Canton.
Absolutely. It was a fun trip, but we're here now, so cool.
February 4th, blizzard.
Yes. Well, it's better than the April blizzards we're used to around here, I guess. So anyway, you guys are just starting a tour with Tiff Merritt,
mm-hmm.
and you're stopping down here to do a solo, and I guess stretch your legs a little bit in the Northeast Ohio area. So how's everything been going of late, you guys?
It's been great. We were lucky enough to have a pretty low-key January and kind of catch our breath before we all gathered and started this tour with Tiff. If you haven't heard Tiff Merritt, she's an incredible songwriter, incredible singer, has a fabulous band. So we're feeling really excited because we get to hear them every night, and they rock.
Cool.
So it's our fifth night of this tour. It's kind of an amazing tour because we're starting in Portland, Maine. We're going to end up in Austin, Texas, for South by Southwest, by way of Idaho and L.A.
So taking the circuitous route, for sure.
Anyway, it's a big tour.
Nice. Well, that means a lot of people get to see you, so that's very cool.
Yeah.
And you guys are supporting your latest album, Knock Knock Get Up,
mm-hmm.
which came out, October of last year, correct?
September,
okay, yep. I knew it was one of those.
Yep.
And I have to say, for me personally, I thought it was just an awesome album.
Thank you.
For people who haven't heard it yet, they really, really need to, because it is truly amazing. And, in fact, earned you guys a couple of No Surf Music Surfy Awards. Artist of the Year for 2012 and Best Album. So
thank you very much.
Indeed, you guys earned it. But before we talk about the album, I don't usually do the whole how did you guys start out thing with bands. But because I feel your story is kind of fascinating,
mm-hmm.
I do want to give people a little bit of a background.
Sure.
So let's just sort of start off with David. You grew up near Columbia, Missouri, right?
Yeah, in Columbia.
In Columbia, okay. Within the city limits, officially.
Yeah.
Nice. So you, I guess, grew up sort of surrounded by that whole kind of Southern folk milieu.
Mm-hmm.
Was that kind of what started influencing you in music?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I mean, I used to go see bands. A lot of kind of the alt-country bands would come through Columbia
mm-hmm.
on their way, you know, traveling through I-70. There was a big venue there, and the University of Missouri is there. So, you know, you had to... you know, a pretty guaranteed audience for that kind of music. And so used to go see the old 97s and Wilco and Sunvolt and the Jayhawks. And so I got exposed to a lot of that music. And that was, you know, when I first started writing, it was more because I was excited about the Beatles or Bob Dylan. But then very quickly it got, you know, more influenced by the kind of alt-country movement that was happening. And that felt like, you know, every other week there was some great band coming through my hometown.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. And I remember actually seeing something you said once about Wilco being like the first band you'd ever heard that really sounded like home.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know a lot of people who feel like that who are from that area. So that's sort of the musical genre you started off thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
But then you left home and went to Massachusetts to a small little school nobody has ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell everybody where that was?
Well, I started school out in California for my mm-hmm. first couple of years, and that's when I started going down to Mexico.
Okay.
And after that 2-year program, I ended up transferring to Harvard, and I finished my degree there. And it was from Harvard that I got a traveling fellowship when I graduated to go and live in rural Mexico and study Mexican folk music.
Okay.
And so that was kind of the, you know, the beginning of this project.
Right.
Was that year abroad there.
And that is really where I think your sound as it is now, that blend, probably came together in your head.
For sure.
So can you sort of just tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got into the Mexican folk thing and why you decided not to just do strictly one or the other, but to create this sort of Mexamericana kind of?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd been interested in the music for years, and then, you know, decided to go down there and actually study the music. And while I was there, it just was a real natural, organic process of learning these new instruments, learning the new rhythms, and having that influence my own songwriting, and feeling like the results were really fascinating and really allowed me to stretch my legs in a way that was unexpected for me and felt like very fertile ground for kind of challenging myself as a songwriter. And so when I got back to Boston, I started a project that was just playing traditional Mexican folk music, and I met Susan. We started the museum. And that was, the idea was more that was a vehicle for my songwriting. And as we were getting going in the first couple of months, it seemed pretty obvious that people were really connecting with those songs that I'd written that were blending the two different styles. And that was really exciting area for us as a band to explore, just in terms of what it allowed us to do rhythmically, how it kind of got us outside of our comfort zone as musicians. And I think it helped us find, you know, our own voice that was unique and worth expressing. And so we kind of have kept exploring in that direction. And I think it's come to a really interesting point with the most recent record, where it's a more sophisticated blending of those styles, not just a translation or interpretation of a traditional song, but really letting that kind of inspire and influence the way we're thinking about songwriting and song structures, but, you know, within the context of kind of an indie rock world, which I mean, I think in your review, you really captured that and had a sense intuitively of that. So,
well, I am brilliant, so that's fun to have.
There you go. There you go. So
nice. Well, hold that thought, because I definitely want to talk a little bit more about that, but I also want to bring Suze in on a little bit of the background story, who, by the way, for those who can't see, is cooking dinner on a hot plate in the green room, making this a very appropriate venue for the Burning River Fireside Chat. So, Seuss, as David mentioned, you guys originally met in Boston, but you grew up in Virginia, correct?
Yeah, exactly. I grew up outside of Charlottesville, Virginia, so out in the country on a little farm that my dad took care of, and he actually homeschooled me and my brothers.
Which explains why she's kind of a little bit of a social freak.
And
I love Suze, by the way. Don't take that wrong. Go ahead.
So we had a lot of time to practice our instruments, and that was something that was really important to my family, was learning to sing and play instruments. So I grew up playing the piano since age 4, and the fiddle since age 7. And it was one of our morning duties. We had to get up and eat breakfast, and we had to practice our instruments and do a math lesson. And then we would get read, my dad would read stories to us, and then we were free to play the rest of the day.
Okay. Of course, probably free to play for you included a little bit of goofing around on the fiddle or something too, I'm sure.
We did some music for fun. I grew up in a really wonderful, strong old time community. So I learned a lot of old time music and went to festivals as a kid. It was a lot of fun.
So you were pretty much also surrounded by sort of that Southern folk tradition.
Totally, yeah.
Which I guess, again, you know, from your own perspective with the fiddle playing in the band, plays into a lot of what you bring into David Wax Museum as well. But obviously what you're doing now is very different. So tell me what you were doing in Boston originally, and, you know, what the music was like that you were working on at the time.
Yeah, well, I actually had met Greg right when I moved up to Boston. He and I started an old-time trio with another woman named Laura Johnson, who's now in Austin. And so we were playing old-time music. I was playing old-time and bluegrass with another guy in Boston. I had studied Irish music and, you know, grew up doing classical and folk music. So I was, I guess just dabbling in all those things.
Okay.
When I met David and had never heard the Mexican music before. I had been to Mexico myself, but not, you know, studying music or anything.
Gotcha. A lot of drinking in Cancun, is that the story?
Oh, I didn't ever went to Cancun. I was teaching in rural schools, actually.
Yeah, but... sure. Uh-huh. I believe you.
I might have been a Cerveza, too.
Okay. So, when you did meet David, then, and you guys started talking a little bit about, you know, possibly collaborating.
Yeah.
And he said something to the effect of, you know, Suze, I really love you as a fiddle player and all that, but what I really want to see is you dancing around and whacking the crap out of a donkey jawbone. Did you think he was absolutely insane? How did that go down?
No, I mean, I like farm animals, you know, because I grew up on a farm. So right. I that wasn't too much of a stretch. And I thought it would be fun to do something other than fiddle because I always had to play the fiddles my whole life. So mm-hmm. it was fun to branch out and do some percussion. And then once I started playing it, the audiences loved it, and that was such a great feedback loop because they thought it was fun, and so I thought it was fun, and I practiced more and got myself a stick. When I first got the job, when I didn't have a stick, so I would just hit it, and the teeth would rattle. But now I have a stick, so I can do lots more exciting sounds. So it's been a wonderful addition, and now you will see tonight I'm playing accordion and the keyboard as well.
Indeed.
Oh no, although tonight I'm not going to play the keyboard. It's
okay.
A shorter set, but
okay.
I've been doing some more instruments as well.
I have to say, the first time I saw you play accordion, it was absolutely hysterical to me, because I remember watching the Born with a Broken Heart video and seeing you standing there with this squeeze box, sort of looking at it like, what in the world is this thing in my arms?
Totally.
And now you can actually play it, so it's pretty cool.
Funny. You're right, because I was just faking it like a marionette for that video.
Mm-hmm.
Just the videographers directing that film said, oh, it'd be cool if you just hold it. I know you don't play it, but just hold it, and it would be a cool, you could pretend like you're a puppet, and we were both kind of on these boxes pretending we were puppets.
Right.
And yeah, little did I know that I'd... I'm a real one myself.
Someday actually learn how to play.
Though Jordan Wax is the accordion master. He's David's cousin.
Indeed.
He plays on all the records, so I don't want anyone out there in radio land, blog land, thinking that I played the accordion on the records, but
right.
I'm trying to imbibe his spirit when I'm on stage playing.
And Jordan is quite awesome, which I guess kind of brings me to my next question. Which is, you know, I've seen you guys play in all sorts of different configurations, everything from, you know, just the two of you up to a six piece. And I think the reason you guys are so amazing live is just the sort of tete-a-tete the two of you have together and the way that you really get into the music and just give it everything you've got. So honestly, for me, my favorite configurations are just the two of you or along with Jordan. I think it adds something when you take things away.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really can, you know, truly do what the music is about. What is, for you guys, I know you've sort of been changing around a lot as far as who tours with you and who plays particular shows, but what's sort of the favorite configuration for you guys, would you say?
Well, I think we've just found it recently. We, Greg, who's been playing with us for a long time, switched over to electric bass,
mm-hmm.
and we got a new drummer who's actually in Israel right now, so he's not with us, but he's going to join us on tour on Wednesday, and that's been really exciting for us to kind of explore having more of a rock template as a band, to have a real kid have electric bass. So for me to be playing a little more electric guitar, for Suze to be plugged in with the keyboard, and I feel like that's opened up a lot more textures for us, and just like allowed the songs to rock a lot more, and you know, just has felt like a real exciting transition for us to kind of have this new, more set lineup, and to really grow as a four-piece. And that feels kind of like the new phase that we're in and kind of where things are going to be for the near future.
Okay. Well, that makes sense, too, with sort of what you were saying about the new album having more of an indie rock kind of feel and a lot more textures to it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be the first time I'm actually seeing you guys since the album came out, so I'm definitely looking forward to it. But I know you have to run. Before you do, I do want to just talk a little bit about Knock Knock Ghetto.
Yeah.
Great.
because, as I said, you know, it's a tremendous album in a lot of ways. But what struck me most was that transition. Mm-hmm. I know I talked about this in my article I wrote about it, and I've talked about it with you guys before. But, you know, your earlier albums were much more basic of sound, mm-hmm. And much more acoustic feeling, almost exactly in a lot of ways, like you guys sound live. Mm-hmm. So what sort of struck you when you decided on this project that you wanted to really add all those different textures and make it sound so completely different?
Yeah, I mean, some of it was maybe the songs and what the songs seem to be asking for. I mean, we'll do a more stripped down approach tonight just because of necessity. Mm-hmm. But the songs just kind of seem to be asking for that approach. And I think just what we were listening to seemed to kind of push us in that direction, the things that were exciting to us. You know, we were listening to this band Yellowbirds, you know, which is a real kind of quintessential indie rock. I mean, it's kind of like a psychedelic indie rock band, mm-hmm. in Brooklyn. And that was a really exciting record for us while we were working on this. And Sam Casira, our producer, had introduced us to the side projects of Los Lobos, the Latin Playboys. Mm-hmm. And so we were listening to those records and all the weird textural sounds they have and the interesting percussion, like really raw, like super compressed percussion sound that just kind of really felt like it was taking up a lot of space in kind of sonic space. And so I think those were things that we were listening to and excited about. Susan and I both really loved the new Gillian Welch record, which is, mm-hmm. just a totally stripped down folk thing. So we were listening to other stuff too, but I think the things that felt like really exciting in terms of like being able to sit and listen to a record were those new sounds. Mm-hmm. And I think that's Sam Casir's sensibility as well as a producer. And so it's really easy for him to kind of think, those are the ideas he has and the inspirations that he has. So it felt like a pretty natural place for us to arrive at.
And we'd done, you know, you've heard Carpenter Bird, we'd done very simple kind of folky lineup. Mm-hmm. So I think it felt like this was like new territory, because it would have been one thing, I guess, to go back to, you know, just fiddling guitar lineup, but mm-hmm. it felt like totally new territory to try a distorted auto part,
right.
And the pocket piano, which is this little synthesizer that you hear in that album, and you know, it might not be the direction we go for the next album, but it felt like David said the right thing for those songs, and it's a really neat experience to have the song lead the way,
right.
Rather than try to say, oh, on this one, I think let's go indie, let's go rock on this album. We definitely didn't go in the studio saying that.
Okay. Well, actually, I feel that that's why it worked so well, because at the core of every one of these songs is still that sort of Mex-Americana folk kind of tradition. But then you decided to build on it where it was appropriate and only where it was appropriate, which is so different from so many other bands that go that big sound. You know, like Bon Iver drives me crazy. I think that's some of the worst music ever produced, honestly. But you guys are kind of like the opposite of the spectrum on this album from that, in that it's full, but you really decided everything needed to have a place or it wasn't going to be in there. Mm-hmm. And you took like a month to do it, right?
Yeah.
So you had a lot of time to work on it.
Yeah.
So just real quick before you run, can you just give me a little bit more of an idea of what the process was like for you guys when you were deciding? Because you said you let the songs lead the way. So how did that come about? You know, was it one person's idea? Was it, you know, make sure somebody would throw something out and then you'd sort of discuss, or what kind of work?
I mean, I think what was interesting is that we spent a lot more time doing pre-production, mm-hmm. which meant going up to the studio and working with Sam, playing the songs early with him, discussing them as they were kind of, I'd written them, but they were still in transition in a lot of ways. And, but then I think, you know, so they evolved in a particular way that was kind of shaped by Sam's input from the beginning. But then I think once we got up there, you know, I mean, it's always been really collaborative, you know, I mean, a lot, it's like everybody's just throwing out ideas. You know, we're kind of like, we start with the basic things that we know for sure. And then we kind of will try something. And what's nice about Sam's setup is that, you know, we had a lot of time. We had 3 weeks and you're not on the clock. I mean, he just works nonstop when you're up there. And so there's
like
time
from
to...
from 10 in the morning till 2 in the morning.
Nice.
So there's time to, like, just throw out some crazy idea and go try it and then see if it made sense or not, you know? And I think we did a lot of that. We tried a lot of things and a lot of stuff stuck that we threw on it, you know? And then the things where it felt like, okay, we've gone too far, and then we, like, pull back and kind of take a couple things out. You know, and we were mixing it as we went, you know, and Sam would kind of approximate what it was going to sound like, you know, once it was mixed. And so we could kind of really hear a sense of, okay, where is this going? You know, we experimented with a lot of stuff we didn't end up doing. There was a lot more weird vocal things, a lot more distortion on the vocals that we didn't use because it ended up not, you know, feeling necessary to get the song across. But, you know, but a lot of that distortion ended up in terms of staying in there with the electric guitar and the way that the pocket piano was used, the way we distorted that sound, and you know, but it was a lot. There was a lot of composition in the studio. A lot of people, I mean, Susan and I knew the songs, but all the musical parts really weren't written. Nobody had really played any songs hardly at all. We just played a couple of them live, so everybody was kind of coming up with parts together and like playing stuff, and everybody would be listening and kind of, you know, giving feedback, but everybody kind of came up with their own parts on the spot.
And what that meant was that after the album was recorded, we all had to learn these songs and learn the parts. And so that was why we thought, I guess we need a keyboard, because we need to be able to, on that first song, Maybe Sleeping, someone has to do, you know, that little hook.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, fiddle wouldn't make sense. And so you often have to make some compromises on stage to try to embody the record, and it is its own state of mind, size, its own ball of wax, so to speak.
Right.
But it was a
everybody catch that pun.
But it was a nice excuse for us to bring in the recording and the keyboard and some other instruments, and Greg did kind of transition to electric bass, which really feels like it has a lot for these songs.
Yeah. Well, I am definitely looking forward to seeing how the songs from the new album translate live. I have heard a couple of them that you played before the album came out, and I found once I was listening to them, it's so amazing how you guys can sort of transition between those two worlds of the studio and the live stuff, but make them both sound so incredible. So once again, thank you guys very much for joining me.
My pleasure.
It's really great to finally get down and have a talk with you guys, because we've been wanting to for quite a while.
Yeah.
And for those of you who are listening, seriously, if you don't know the David Wax Museum, you need to learn these guys from back to front, because they are truly awesome. They have four studio albums out. They're all worth listening to many times. And if you get to catch them live, I'm absolutely serious. They're one of the best live bands in the country. So don't miss any opportunity. And they tour all the time, so they've got to be coming somewhere near you somewhere soon. So David, Suze, thanks again. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.
And this has been another edition of No Surf Music, Burning River, Fireside Chats. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, signing off.
This has been a No Surf Music Burning River Fireside Chat. This is your host, Jason D. Diesel Hammond, signing off. Remember, No Surf Music is your source for the best in Americana, alt-country, indie rock, and more. For original reviews and interviews, visit nosurfmusic.com.